Welcome back to the UFO Files, on the line from California and Oregon, respectively. Or maybe it's the other way around. We have Helen Luttrell and Jean Bilodeau. They've written a book called Rachel's Eyes. It's an impressive and fast, spirited read, and it's true, almost unbelievable. Let's get back to the story. Have either one of you suspected that you've run across another hybrid, personally?
I have not, that I know of. But I've seen, in a couple of instances, I've seen some children that I think were. But I can't prove it, and I wasn't in a position to question them or their parents or even strike up a conversation. But there's something about the eyes.
Well, what is, and this is for either one of you as well, what is the reasoning behind the hybrid program if it exists? In other words, can these people not multiply by themselves anymore, or what? Are they trying to improve their race? Is it genetic engineering? What's going on? Do either of you have an idea?
Well, I think it's genetic engineering. I think it's several of those things you said. I think they need to improve their race as far as emotions go. I'm almost positive it's genetic engineering.
You know, the thing, and you mentioned Charles Hall, the thing that amazes me is here this colonel, really, he didn't try to keep secrets. Charles Hall was there as a weather observer in Nevada and saw these beings, according to his stories, all the time the children would come down and watch the weatherman work. And no one really has tried to tell him to be quiet at this point. So, I mean, what do you think is going on? I mean, how have they kept this? This is pretty amazing stuff. How could they keep it a secret? And why do they want to keep it a secret, I guess, is even a better question. Either way, you have an idea? Or is that, that's just the way the government likes to work. I know that.
Well, that's true. And it's probably a control thing, you know, all-powerful governments. Wasn't there a study, the Brookings study or something, that said that 80% of the population would panic if they knew there were extraterrestrials around?
Yeah. Well, basically, you're right. And that study did exist. And it came out, I think, during the Eisenhower years. And I really think the hidden message there, and I've discussed this with our staff, is that on the surface, the Brookings Institute was saying fundamentalist Christians wouldn't accept it. But underneath, they were saying to the Republicans who were in charge at the time that you're going to destroy your base because they will do anything to try to destroy you back because this is contrary to their religious beliefs. And so it was more of a warning than it was a factual finding. You can't tell people because they can't accept it. It was more twofold than that. It was more... you don't want to lose your power base, so it's best to keep this quiet.
Well, I do think that people could accept it. There's always some people that can't accept anything out of their...
Well, I'd like to agree with you, and I do agree with you, except you travel through parts of this country, and people are not ready to accept anything that would challenge religion at all.
I understand that. I do understand that.
Even though I personally, and I don't want to get into a philosophical... discussion with both of you, I don't think it's necessarily contrary to any religious belief. No, you know, so, but it's just one of those things. It's, you know, Brazil is making disclosures now of extraterrestrial, not necessarily the presence, but the UFOs for sure, and officially saying that they have had encounters, and they expect even more to come forward in the next 2 or 3 weeks to a month. So perhaps all this will change.
Well, don't you think acknowledging the presence of UFOs is the first step? And if you think anywhere beyond presence of these vehicles, there has to be something or someone who is controlling these vehicles, maybe from inside, and maybe it's, you know, remotely controlled from wherever they come from. But I think they're taking one step at a time.
Well, yeah, that seems to be pretty good thinking on your part. I agree with you. Let's stop and think for a minute. People listening to the show, and we're heard around the world. Do you think that hybrids, I mean, they may have, for lack of a better term, adopted a hybrid? Or I mean, this program's been going on for at least 50 years, 30 to your experience, almost 40. And I have other stories that go back further than that. That may mean that when you go down to McDonald's tonight, the guy serving you the coffee or the Coke is a hybrid, and he may not even know it. So now let's get back to writing this book. What's the objective of the book? Gene, when you came aboard, what did you, I mean, it's a great story. You're going to have to tell it. Anyway, I can understand that from a writer's standpoint.
It was probably twofold. Here was a woman that had kept a secret all these years and had no one to tell it to, you know, for fear of ridicule, and she was brave enough to share it with me. I was curious, of course, to see how much of it was true, how much we could prove as true. I wasn't too much into the conspiracy theories at that time. I tend to be more open in my beliefs now, after some of the instances that we have had.
Have either one of you personally felt any pressure from someone?
Helen had some visitors in a van one morning, and she could tell you about that. It frightened not only her, but her son, adult son.
What happened there, Helen?
Well, it was about 9 o'clock, was cloudy, overcast, okay, it was in May, I believe. And my son and I had both gotten up from the table at the same time to get another cup of coffee. And we walked over to the kitchen counter, and as we got there at the coffee pot, which was on the right-hand side of a window that looked out to the front, we looked to the left, and there was a big gray van sitting in the neighbor's driveway right next to my lawn, and it had two occupants.
Now, this was an normally unused driveway.
Right. And they were parked in exactly the right position so that they could stare into the kitchen window, and they did this. And they appeared to be some sort of paramilitary, and I'm not sure what they were. They had green uniforms on and green caps, and they wore sunglasses, which was unusual because, as I said, this was an overcast day, and it was early in the day. They did not need sunglasses. But I felt that the driver was staring into my eyes and had locked on them. And crazy as it sounds, I felt that he was trying to extract information from me. And at first, I was really, really frightened for just a few seconds. And then it dawned on me what I felt that they were there to do was extract information from me. And then I became really, really angry, and I tried to block out whatever thoughts he was trying to place in my mind. My son was frightened out of his wits because he'd never seen anything like that. And I think now that their faces did not actually look, they seemed android.
Well, I started to say, it sounds perhaps that they weren't of this government.
I don't think they were. Their vehicle was supposed to look that way, but nothing was right about it either. The license plate was too big. There was one too many numbers on it. But it seemed to add something else about this story that that wasn't right either, about the fact that they couldn't see in the window.
Well, right, and when Helen called me and told me this, I asked her to write it down while it was still fresh in her memory. But there was a big hole in that story, and that was that she explained that it was cloudy, it was misting, dark, and they had sunglasses on, which didn't quite fit. And then she gets to talking about their eyes being so horrid. And I said, well, wait a minute, you know, this is one of these little slips in logic that Helen every once in a while comes up with, and if you delve deep enough, you can find out that there's something underneath that. She saw nothing unbelievable or illogical about her statement. And I said, but Helen, they had sunglasses on. It was cloudy. How could you see their eyes? And it just seemed to be that little telltale slip in logic that something more.
Helen, when you had regression therapy, did that come up?
Yes, it did. But I still maintained that I could see their eyes. and I still believe that I did. But I also know that it's physically impossible. And I know from going out afterwards several times, standing in, well, parking my car, so I'd be on the same eye level as they were, parking in the same positions that they were. You cannot see in that inside that kitchen window. There's an overhang there, and you just can't see inside of it. But I felt that they were looking in and seeing inside.
Did they finally drive off or what?
Yes, after a couple of 3 minutes, they backed out and turned around and drove off kind of slowly down the street.
Did you ever ask your neighbor about the car in the driveway?
No. No, they're not much believers. None of my neighbors believe in this sort of stuff, so I don't.
How about your grown son?
My son thought he could see their eyes, too. So this is another thing. So he had a slip in logic, too.
Gene, what do you make of that?
Just that something else happened, and that since eyes seem to be a repeating theme with Helen, that there was some significance to this happening. Now, we didn't have anything underlined in big red letters or anything like that to say, yes, this reached a logical conclusion or something. It just happened. And then it appeared to have happened again several weeks later.
Again, huh?
Again. Not, I don't believe it was quite as traumatic. And both of these people in the front of the car, Helen, related to move in synchronicity with each other. If one turns, they both turn. We're robotic.
Oh. Did this happen near your home, too?
Yes. The second time that Gene's mentioning was a few weeks later, and they, the same two. And I think it was a slightly different van. It had different with antennas and spotlights on the top. Just but it was the same two people, and nothing was right about this van either. But they drove up real slowly up the street, and they paused for maybe 10 seconds in front of the house, and then they drove on rather mechanically down the street and out.
Have you had any other encounters? I mean, more overt, or has it always been something like this? They're just there.
Well, we've had interesting things happen.
Like what?
Well, we were laying, Helen was laying on the couch, and she was starting to undergo a regression. And I always sat at the edge of the couch in a chair, and just in case she got too emotional or something came up. And the therapist who was regressing her, had her back to the front window and was concentrating on Helen. Helen had two plants. Well, the first thing that happened, eagles have always played a very interesting part of this story. And just as the regression started, a huge eagle flew by, I mean close, within 10 feet of the big living room window. It just took, the size of it took up the whole picture window.
So we're talking about a wild giant eagle.
Yes.
It's in town, too, where eagles live. It's not a natural habitat there for them.
But that was the beginning of it. Then they, as June or Dr. Steiner was questioning Helen, I looked, and Helen had two plants, hanging plants, in the corner of the living room, which neither she nor Dr. Steiner could see because they were concentrating on each other. And I looked, and one plant started to sway. The other plant was absolutely still, now swinging in maybe a 15-inch arc. And I looked around to see if there were any windows open or any type of ventilation that would cause this, and there was no reason. And I motioned to someone else in the room, and they looked, and I could see them checking all the doors, windows, and everything else that could make this happen, and there was nothing. And then after about 10 minutes, it stopped. I don't know what that was.
Now, you've been a UFO researcher for 10 years, you said. Have you ever felt intimidated by somebody to keep a story away?
I don't live where there's many people. Most of the people that I live around, anybody, you know, from out of the area would be noticed. And most of the people that live here have seen UFOs.
You know, our time's almost up, and I'm going to give a big plug for the book again here in a minute. How long's the book been out?
A couple months, maybe?
No, it's been more than that. It came out in two volumes to begin with, and they started in at the end of November, the 24th, I think. And now it's all in one volume.
Is there more to the story? I mean, like this exchange program with ETs, for lack of a better term. Do you know who's behind that exactly in your investigation?
We're hoping to find out more with the release of the book.
So this is a work in progress.
This is definitely a work in progress.
And we are going to stay in touch with you.
Oh, thank you.
And we find out more about it as it goes along. Helen, before I go, you seem pretty definite that you thought Rachel was dead.
That's what came out in the regression.
I mean, how did you know? Were you there?
No.
She has had paranormal experiences since then that would lead her to believe that that Rachel and Marissa have visited her.
You see them in dreams or something, Helen, or what?
No, actually they come usually in the form of really unusual looking birds. Sometimes eagles, but usually other birds that don't look real. And I know this sounds strange too.
Well, I've had people tell me things similar to that.
But I do believe that the two of them come usually together.
Then you have a feeling or a hunch or a message that they would like to have this story out.
I do. And especially, I was going to say, especially my daughter, but I think Rachel too, just as much.
I wonder if Rachel died, it was a violent death? Are these people violent? But you thought maybe we did it.
Well, I think it was a government agency that did it. But she was supposedly thrown down a flight of stairs.
You mean they pick her up, take her out someplace and shoot her?
No, they just shoved her down the stairs.
Pull the old Richard Widmark thing, huh?
Mm-hmm. I don't know about that. Accidental death.
Well, they're pretty good at that. Or somebody is.
I would just like to comment on the manifestations of these things. That it isn't just Helen that sees these things. At one time, the two eagles that were hovering by her house were witnessed by a neighbor that was standing with her, a young girl. And also, it was what, last year or the year before, that you were up at the casino and she was stopped in for some lunch.
Oh, yeah.
And she was standing in line, and go ahead and tell the rest of that one. That was pretty amazing.
Yes, I was in line there, and I was the only one in line when the face opened up. And so I put my money down, and the Native American lady there said, well, did you want to pay for the young blonde girl behind you, too? And I said, I kind of looked around. I said, well, there's nobody there. And she sort of glanced, and she said, it looked really upset. And she said, oh, I guess I made a mistake. And I don't know why I didn't tell her at the time that I'm sure that it was my daughter made herself visible to someone else.
And this was on the anniversary of...
And it was either, is either my birthday or hers, and I can't remember which. And it had been kind of a ritual. Whenever we could do that, we would go on our birthdays. We would go to a casino and gamble. We didn't spend much money, but we had an awful good time, basically. And it was a chance to get together. And so I always do that.
And what is this, an Indian casino there?
Yes.
Do you know what Native American tribe she belonged to, the lady that saw the...
I believe she was probably a Klamath. I'm not sure. But I have quite a few friends up there now who have told the story, too, and they say, oh, she was there. Your daughter was there.
She possibly was. So you, and this may be the reason you went ahead with the book, and it may be even the reason you got such a good author, a co-author, to write it with you.
I think so, because that was just through several synchronicities. A whole lot of them played into that we haven't gone into.
Yes, the birds especially.
But the reason that I'm even up here in this town in the first place, you can imagine, it was a synchronicity in itself. And, you know, so I think it was meant that I didn't find someone, a real good writer, to help carry out the investigation.
Well, we're almost out of time. Both of you, I'd like to get a little short closing note from both of you. What have I left something out that you think, you know, the listeners would like to hear? I know there's lots of things we could go on for hours.
Now, did you tell about Rachel's gift?
Oh, no, I didn't. I started to, and then I got sidetracked. My daughter came home that one day from school and found Rachel and all her things gone, and called me, and I made my phone calls and everything. But my daughter had gone into the Rachel's bedroom one last time to look around, and she saw on the mirror there was a note, and she took it down and read it, and said something like, I'm sorry to have to go like this, but I have left you a gift to remember me by, love, Rachel. And the thing was that at that time, previous to that time, she had been almost totally blind, and all of a sudden, her vision had returned quite a bit, and she could see that note. And it was several minutes before she realized that she had read it.
Can I talk to a blind physician? And he said that, I said, well, why didn't she just walk in and notice that she was looking?
Well, I'm visually challenged. I'm legally blind. And your brain kind of works if you were sighted before, which I was. Your brain reconstructs things. And so you don't really notice whether or not you can really see it until either you miss a stare that's not there, or you try to read something and you have to magnify it. And so that's understandable. When I started losing my eyesight, I didn't notice it. It just it's a gradual thing. And at first I thought it's just shadows and things, and after a while they were pretty permanent. And once my vision, I've had 13 eye operations, and my vision's been restored somewhat, and it's a gradual thing.
Hers was one eye totally at first, and then a few months later she lost the other eye totally. Then it gradually came back a little, but never very much.
And that's a very understandable story, the way that would work. With that, we're going to keep our eyes open, hybrids among us. Rachel seemed very interesting in many ways, but you were never afraid of her or thought, man, that's a weird child, right? I mean, Helen, you kind of identified with her right away.
I did.
Helen did. Some of her, the roommates and friends of Marissa, did not. They always thought she was kind of from outer space, very unusual, couldn't relate it.
When you started investigating this story, I imagine that's a tale in its own, and I wish we had a lot of time, but in a nutshell, you were able to verify a lot of things fairly quickly, right?
Mm-hmm. The easy stuff, yes. The fact that Rachel attended college at that time period was very difficult to prove. There were no records of her. I could talk to people that remembered her. I even talked to someone that went out on a date with her. And then that threw him into a big panic because he couldn't remember anything about the date after a certain point in the evening.
Yeah, we discussed that. Did he know, did he remember whether or not they separated or they were still together the whole day? You know, double dates sometimes split up.
No.
He just didn't remember anything. He didn't remember anything.
Well, normally I remember my dates.
Hey, now both of you, wish you luck. We look forward to further developments and hope the book does well. And you're on to something.
And if we could just get people, you know, that have had similar experiences, if it just offers the hope that they're not alone, I think that's a big thing.
You have a way for them to get in touch with you?
I have my email address.
We have that information on our website, and then go over there and find it. Okay, thank you very much, both of you.
Well, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.